We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Shh. Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting wabbits.
Is this what you think I sound like? Producer Mike. I have one thing to say about that.
Stop it.
That's it. Welcome back to Overnight America. I got to find the exact date. Let me check this out. Wolfman Jack passed away on July 1st, 1995. And he was apparently interviewed perhaps a week earlier on Charlie Brennan's program. So back in 1995, Charlie Brennan was hosting in the morning with Kevin Horrigan on KMOX. I forgot what the program was called. They'll say it in this interview. It's like the morning meeting, the morning wrap up, morning meeting. Sounds right. And one of the great American disc jockeys of all time, Wolfman Jack, somehow we were talking about him last week, and someone called in and reminded us that one of his last interviews was with Charlie Brennan here on KMOX. So I messaged Charlie and I asked him, hey, do you have that interview? Is that true? He said, yeah, it's true. I think it was about a week later, but yeah, it wasn't a day or two. It was a week. And yeah, we were one of his very last interviews. It was over the phone. And I said, do you have the interview? And he goes, yeah, I think I have it somewhere. Well, guess who found it? Charlie. And I want to play the Wolfman Jack interview for you. It's a little bit long, so yeah. We normally go late on this break anyway. I don't want to hold it any longer. This interview is so good. Now, the quality is a little bit lower because back in 1995, you know, when you're digitizing things, it's sometimes the quality doesn't transfer. So they record it on a tape or whatever it is and transfer it. So it doesn't sound as good as a regular KMOX broadcast, but it's well worth your time to listen to this interview with Wolfman Jack, circa 1995, Charlie Brennan, and co-host Kevin Horrigan.
Maybe the best disc jockey from the past 30 years. You loved him in American Graffiti, The Midnight Special, and, of course, on the 250,000-watt blowtorch XERB from Mexico. Ladies and gentlemen, Wolfman Jack on KMOX.
All right, how you doing, man?
Great, how you doing, Wolfman?
Is this the Kevin and Charles show?
It sure is.
Morning meeting?
Yes, it is, sir.
All right, have mercy. Great to have me with you.
Who would ever have thought that Wolfman Jack would appear on the Mighty Mox?
Well,
this is a talk station.
Well, you know, the KMOX is one of those legendary radio stations that really used to play the big hits all the time, too, you know.
Yeah, but we only have 20% of those 250,000 watts that you had in Mexico.
Yeah, but you guys really, you used to be St. Louis, man.
Oh, still are.
I know. I'm just saying that it's great to be with you, man.
Well, what was, 250,000 watts, did you have to drive down there to broadcast?
Well, it was a funny thing. What the station was totally self, you know, took care of itself. They had their own generator plant. There wasn't enough electricity in the town of Villa Cunha to supply electricity to the transmitter. So they had to have their own transmitter, their own diesel engine that the diesel truck would come in every day, you know, and fill up the tanks. And we burned it all out in one night. And they had this big, big thing. It looked like two locomotive engines together. It made a hell of a noise, so we had to keep it. The building was like 500 yards from the actual other building, so you wouldn't hear it. And then the transmitter was a real piece of machinery in itself. It was actually built to generate like 1,000,000 watts, and they had these gigantic driver tubes in it that cost like $1,000,000 a piece. This is back in 62 now. And it was originally built by the people, the RCA people, for the Voice of America. And there's a whole thing I tell you about in the book on how this guy Arturo Gonzalez got them to build this thing, and then he never paid them for it. And then there's a whole thing that went on about that. And then the reason I got to take the station over is because that Mr. Gonzalez had run a scam on these preachers where all these guys who were on, like, say, from 7 to midnight, they would be on for, like, 15-minute stretches apiece, and he charged them, like, $1 million for a lifetime contract, you know? And then there was a clause in the contract down the bottom there that said, if the station is ever taken over by the Mexican government, you know, this contract is null and void. Well, what happened is he got all this money from these preachers and gave these lifetime contracts, and then he never paid any taxes, and, you know, Mexico is a very socialistic type country where, you know, they pay for all your dental work and Medicare and everything. And he never paid anything for like 4 years. So he ran up like $1.5 million bill with him. So they finally sent in their own interventor, which is like the receiver, to take care of the running of the radio station and also collecting the money. So they would get their money. So it kind of like put Gonzalez out of the picture. But he was really still running the thing because he was the one who appointed the receiver. Now, I showed up on the scene just when they were having trouble with this guy, Montes, who was the receiver. And he was a real thrilling type of a crook, you know, the Humphrey Bogart type, who was beating up the people in the station. And he wasn't paying them the money, and he was pocketing money himself. Everybody was ripping off the radio station. And when I showed up, I showed up in the middle of the night one time. And it's all in a book. And this guy, Mario Alfaro, who was the only one there could speak English, I told him that I would help him out, and I'd give him money, and I have that money on me then, and I spread around a few $100 bills, and everybody started to like me. So, you know.
That's one way to do it, right.
Yeah, oh, that always works, man. Just hand somebody a $100 bill, they're going to listen to you, you know what I mean? And anyway, we managed to send some lawyers to Mexico City where they went to the Mexican FCC, and we got rid of this one receiver, this guy Montes, and we appointed our own receiver, and they appointed me the U.S. representative. And that's when Wolfman Jack was born at 12 midnight on that station. See, then the next day, when I finally got the receivership in and I was appointed the U.S. representative of the station, then it was in my hands. And I went to the preachers who were on the air at that time, and I said, hi, this is Bob Smith here. You listen, Reverend Jessup. If you want to be on the air tomorrow night, you're going to have to send me at least 3 months in advance, and I figure you're paying about $10,000 a month. So you're going to have to send me $30,000 here. I got to receive it this afternoon, otherwise you don't go on the air the next day. Well, he said, yeah, right. He hung up the telephone on me. Well, that night, I put Wolfman Jack on the air from 7 until about 4 o'clock in the morning. I had a hell of a time. Here I am, you know, 250,000 watts. On this big border blaster, and just playing rhythm and blues all night. Well, then the next day, I went back to the preacher. I said, hello, Reverend Jessup. It's old me again. And listen, man, I'm going to ask you one more time. You got to send me that money, that $30,000. Otherwise, you ain't going to hear yourself on the station no more. I'll have to find somebody else to buy this radio time. Oh, yeah, Reverend Smith, how are you? Certainly good to hear from you again. Listen, where do you want me to send that? So we don't want to hear that devil creature on the air again. We definitely want to get ourselves back on the air. Oh, Western Union? Oh, right away. Well, I collected about $350,000, bam, like that. Stuck it in the back of my Starfire Oldsmobile convertible, and I sent this guy, Larry Brandon, back to Shreveport with about half the money. I took the other money, went back into Mexico, started greasing everybody, you know, and taking care of, you know, buying a new car for this guy and taking care of this guy's new baby birth and fixing up this guy's house. So everybody loved the Wolfman. I said, oh, we love having the Wolfman on the air here.
Man, that's a heck of a way to start a career.
Well, that's where it started.
That's amazing. It's all in the new book, Have Mercy.
The new book, Have Mercy.
Yep, and boy, what a career. I think the one scene you're in throughout American Graffiti, but the end of the movie, and if you haven't seen it, you got to go see it. I don't want to give it away, but Richard Dreyfuss finally visits this guy who's been entertaining all the guys and the gals who've been cruising all night, and they see the Wolfman, who actually is a little bit lonely, and it's quiet, and although everyone else is rocking and partying to your music all night long, being the disc jockey is not always all that much fun.
Oh, man, sometimes a lot of lonely hours. But, you know, the thing is, if you really love what you're doing, you know, when you make that communication with those folks out there, and you really got a groove going, and you're really playing your own music, you know, And you're able to segue that stuff together so it creates these subliminal thoughts in those people's heads. You know, if you stay with me for like 15 minutes, I would create a thing where I'd reach a crescendo and always bring little happiness tears to your eyes, give you a great moment, you know?
They gave you $3,000 for your appearance for that movie, but then took care of you afterwards. You want to explain that real quickly?
Well, it's a funny thing, man. I spent a lot of time with George Lucas when we did the music tracks for it, you know, because he wanted to clear all the music just a one-time payment, you know, so that he wouldn't have to keep paying, you know, as the movie ran. And that was probably the biggest expense for the whole movie, because I think he shot the movie for about $150,000, and then he spent about $350,000 clearing the music. And I spent a lot of time helping him do that. I called the different people that I knew, and we got the best records and the best music we could for the movie. And then we spent a lot of time. I used to record all my phone calls with people. I still got a ton of them. And he would go through all the phone calls and pick the right ones for the different moments he had in the picture. And, well, anyway, like you say, I got paid $3,000 to do my little bit in the movie and that little scene that I did and the rest of the stuff that I did for him. And then the movie came out, became a big hit. There was lines around the block, and I got a contract in the mail which gave me a piece of the movie. So about every quarterly, I get a nice fat check from the American Graffiti folks, you know, the Universal people, because they sell a whole lot of video cassettes now, too. So it's very nice, and he's a hell of a man, that George Lucas.
Wolfman Jack, our guest on the morning meeting, 436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. You used to listen to him, or maybe you saw him on the Midnight Special. Talk to the Wolfman.
Oh, man. How good was that? Oh, I enjoyed that interview so much. That's from 1995, classic Charlie Brennan, Kevin Horrigan doing the morning meeting on KMOX interviewing Wolfman Jack. They wanted to have a 1,000,000-watt transmitter. A 1,000,000-watt transmitter. I can't imagine that. Oh, that would drain half of the country of Mexico trying to fuel something like that. And also his first night on the air, he went from 7 p.m. to 4 a.m. He did a 9-hour shift. Oh, great Wolfman Jack interview. I'm so glad we're able to share that with you. I'm so thankful that Charlie Brennan was able to find that. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. It's Overnight America, KMOX. I cannot imagine what 1,000,000 watts would be like for a radio station to broadcast that way. You know, I'm just doing a quick search. Apparently Venezuela? Does Venezuela have a 1,000,000-watt station? In Europe, there was a 1.4 million watt station, but because of unauthorized use by other countries, it was largely wasted at night. Wow, I didn't realize they made it that large. And even a 50,000 watt station like KMOX reaches all over the place. Here at night, we're able to reach all the states pretty much east of the Mississippi and a lot of them to the west. It's 30 plus states we are able to hit, including Mexico and Canada. It's remarkable, the footprint. And that's 50,000 watts. 1,000,000 watts. Whew. Pretty much, it would look like those cartoons where, you know, when someone gets electrified in a cartoon and their body starts to get the wiggly lines and you can see their bones on the inside, that's you walking up to a 1,000,000-watt transmitter. I don't even know how an engineer can approach something like that without instantly having a heart attack. Let me get to Lou, who's calling in. Hey, Lou, what's going on?
Hi. I was just telling your phone person there that I was stationed in San Antonio, Texas for all but 3 months of my service in the Air Force from 1964 to 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about 150 miles from Acuña, Villa Acuña was called, and then it became a city, Ciudad Acuña, Mexico, mm-hmm. right across the river from Del Rio. And we would make periodic trips, the 150 miles, to visit with the señoritas down there. And quite often when we were coming back, late at night, early in the morning, we would be listening to Wolfman Jack, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Saying, this is the Wolfman boogieing at your baby over XERF, Acuna, Coahuila, Mexico. And I after I got out of the service, I lost track of him. I didn't know what happened to him, but then saw him on the Midnight Special there.
Oh, yeah.
And, I guess he got famous after that. I don't think he was a very big celebrity before that.
When I don't know. I feel like for radios, people really knew who he was just based on the pure landscape he was able to reach with a station that had, was it 250,000 watts at the time? And I know a lot of people, even in Detroit, that used to listen to him. So that would really cover a lot of the United States at night.
Yeah, it's the AM frequencies that you're on. It's terrestrial. It doesn't propagate ionospherically because of the frequency it's on. But when you have a lot of power, it can get quite a distance, especially, see, you're probably what they call a clear channel station at night.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
The other stations that are on your frequency are either very low power or off the air so that you can be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm originally from Michigan, Lansing, Michigan, mm-hmm. and I used to listen to KMOX.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And I know there's so many stories of people that are able to listen all over. And it's amazing. It's wonderful. And I'm glad that you had a Wolfman Jack memory. Hopefully that interview took you back.
Yeah, it brought me back to my wild oats sowing days.
Your senorita days.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lou. Good to hear from you.
Okay. Nice talking to you.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Wow. All the way down in Lansing. Had to hop on over to the Mexican side and check out some of those senoritas. I love that Wolfman interview. I'm still trying to figure out a good way to close the show. Wolfman Jack had this song and he would talk over it and it was so soft and nice. I played a song last week when we were doing the whole deal and I'm still haven't decided if we're going to use that song yet. We'll figure it out. Once in a while, one day it'll just naturally fall into place and we'll be able to do that. I got a couple of stories here. I can't believe you think this is what I sound like, Producer Mike.
Shh. Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting wabbits.
You really think if I put on the Elmer Fudd hat, it'll be fitting because I sound like I don't hear it even a little bit. Not even a little. All right, a lot of sports stories that happened today. St. Louis officially named one of 8 cities to host the XFL in 2020. Commissioner Oliver Luck.
Just as the gateway arch in St. Louis represents opportunity and promise to many, the XFL symbolizes the opportunity and promise of football reimagined and will return the game to a passionate fan base left behind.
Football reimagined. So the 8 teams during the NFL's offseason will be... I just had it here a second. Hold on. Where was it? I thought... Okay, New York, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, St. Louis, Seattle, Tampa Bay, and Washington, D.C. We're in good company. I mean, look at New York, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, Seattle, Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay might be the smallest of those areas. St. Louis would be the second smallest. I think we're smaller than Seattle, Dallas, New York, Houston, Los Angeles, D.C., of course. Yeah, so that's pretty neat. And since it's going to be playing at the Dome, apparently you can already put down $50 if you want to try to put a deposit down on some season tickets, which would be pretty neat. And you can also get merchandise, too, hoodies and hats that say St. Louis and XFL together. XFL.com is where that is located at. But, yeah, $50 if you want to put a deposit down. And the teams will be owned by the league. Vince McMahon of WWE fame, of course. Apparently, not a lot of details are known, but they expect this to be a more conservative version of the way it was before. Not edgy like it was before. Real quick, let me get to George calling in. Hey, George.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I'm down in Jackson, Mississippi on my way to Mobile, and I've been listening to KMOX since I left St. Louis this evening, and I don't know how these transponders work or these signals, but you guys have been coming in crystal clear.
It's amazing how that works, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just give us a quick rundown. How does it work?
So how does the signal carry as far, is what you're asking?
Yeah. Especially at night. I've heard of other people, my friends, my son was in Arizona. He said he could listen to you at nighttime. Not so much in the daytime, though.
Yeah, it's a little bit different in the daytime. I'll do a quick explanation right after the break. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks, George. Good to hear from you.
Right on.
So he's down in Jackson, Mississippi. I'll explain it. I'll give you the general rundown of why it works. And when you normally listen to an AM station, you know, why it doesn't work for all of them. There's something special about KMOX, that's why. But I'll give you a more technical answer next on Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Jackson, Mississippi is a far off land from St. Louis. All things considered, it is quite a drive. If you just go due south, Memphis, I guess, would be the middle point. And then keep going. You'll eventually hit Jackson as you go down 55. And it's amazing that we can have callers from that area say, we're coming in like a local station. Why is it like that? He asks. Well, I'll give you a quick explanation of why it works without getting too technical, because there could be some radio engineers listening right now because they love KMOX and will say, well, technically, actually, they'll give their engineer answer that would be more technical, but I'll give you the basic rundown. So KMOX is what is called a clear channel station. Now, don't confuse that with the former group of radio station owners that used to be called clear channel. So clear channel station means back in the day, there was a special designation for certain radio stations. This is back when there were only AM radio stations. And this designation was meant to make it so information could get out in case of an emergency. And there were certain stations that, once they had this designation, had an obligation, if there was breaking news or a national tragedy or there was war or something like that, that they would be able to broadcast these things. And there would always be a way for local cities to be able to get this information when it happened. So think about it. Back then, there wasn't as many radio stations out there. Now, there's a ton of radio stations. So eventually, as the radio medium grew, a lot of local communities started getting their own stations. So go back even further before that happened. So what happens if you're in the middle of nowhere and there's a national emergency and radio is your only form of communication? How do you find out these things? Well, that's what they decided to do. So let's say KMOX, one of the clear channel stations, they have this obligation to staff people through the night in the type of emergency they can get it out. And really, they traffic it in a way so that certain frequencies are the clear channel on that signal, and it's able to reach a large geographic area. And it was like that for a long time. Well, FM radio comes around, and more radio stations start popping up in smaller communities, and there's just huge propagation of just all over. I mean, you can just find people broadcasting things. You really didn't need that as much as you did back then. Or maybe you did, because they never dropped that designation. Well, the FCC actually is talking about doing that, but that's a whole different story. So that's why you can hear KMOX all the way down in Jackson, Mississippi, like it's a local station. They said in order for those big designated stations to be heard, if we're going to say, okay, KMOX at 1120 AM, we'll get that crown, then all the other 1120 AMs have to power down so they're not competing with that clear channel station. And at night, at sundown, and then back in the morning at sun up, they go back to their full power. But at sundown, they drop it down to normally a much lower wattage. So let's say a station is 5,000 watts. They might drop it down to 500 or something like that at night. If it's a 1,000-watt station, it might go down to 100 or whatever. So each station's different. And it's all traffic through the FCC. They designate who does what. And since KMOX is one of those great historic stations, and so they were one of the large powerhouse stations from back in the day, they were able to get that designation, and they just kind of were grandfathered in, and it stayed that way. That regulation still is in effect today. So 1120 AMs all across the United States normally power down at night, as they are meant to during the whole, because of this clear channel status. Game OX stays the same, and that way there's less interference on 1120 AM, and that's why we get all the way down to Jackson, Mississippi, just like our listener called in who wanted an explanation of why he can hear us clear as day. The signal is just amazing. So KMOX at night just reaches all over the place. We get listeners from Kansas. We've had, let me see, I'm just going to go over the states. I know we have listeners. So Kansas, Texas. I don't know if we have any Oklahoma listeners. If you're actually listening to 1120 AM in Oklahoma, I'd like to hear from you, but I don't think we do. If we do, they just don't call in. 314-436-7900. Or better yet, if you want to make the call on us, it's 800-925-1120. I know we have Mississippi. We've had some from Alabama, Georgia, Florida. I think we've had some from South Carolina. I don't remember any from North Carolina. I know we've had some from Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Michigan. I don't know if we had any from Wisconsin. I know we have some from Minnesota. We've had some from Iowa. I think we've even had some as far as South Dakota. Don't remember any in Nebraska, but pretty much all the other ones along the coast, Pennsylvania, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, maybe. I think we've had some from New York. Massachusetts, I don't know. But, I mean, we reach all the way up there. It's just amazing, absolutely amazing, the reach for a radio station like this and the endless potential at night. Unfortunately, people don't listen to AM radio like they used to. When FM came around, the music stations really started to dominate those FM stations after a while. It wasn't originally like that. Originally, they didn't know what to do with an FM. They experimented with it. It kind of went away and eventually came back. And, well, once they got stereo, it was such a big deal to get that with music that it just made sense. And eventually, less and less people started listening to AM radio, and at night even. It's a whole different story here than it was just 20 years ago, like when Jim White was doing Overnight America. Was it called Overnight America when Jim White was doing it? I don't know. Maybe it's just Jim White show or something. And I know some people still call and say they listen all the way back to the Jim White days. It's just amazing. It's really remarkable. Oh, I used to live in St. Louis. Now I live in Florida and I still listen to you. And I used to listen to Jim White and I can do this. Loves, I mean, it just really is awesome to hear those type of stories. Never gets old, really. And even in Kentucky, we have a listener out there and I can't remember her name. But hopefully she makes it back out here for the holiday radio show where she was last year. During the holiday radio show, she came all the way out here and she said, I came here just because I love listening to KMOX and I wanted to see all the personalities. Oh, that was really cool. Of course, we got Michigan. You know, we don't get a lot of calls from Canada. Every once in a while, we used to get a call from Canada. I'll talk to someone from Winnipeg that's in the radio business and he says he can listen to us up there. I don't think we've had any listeners from Vermont either. Eventually, we'll get some. You know, what we're going to have to do is just do like a night where we just see how many different locations we can get calls from. That would be really cool. Really, really cool. Oh, Bill's calling in. Hey, Bill, what's going on?
Good evening. How are you?
Good.
I'm in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, which is 50 miles north of Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
I used to live in Granite City, and I've been listening to KMOX when conditions are right.
Yeah.
Since about 1970.
Oh, wow. You know, it's amazing how it travels there. I think we have some listeners in Oklahoma. I just don't remember hearing any call in, so I'm glad you're... So you worked in Granite City, you said?
No, I used to live in Granite City. I left there in 84,
okay.
I believe it was, moved out this way.
I see. Was it work or something else that took you out?
My father died. He lived in Coffeyville, Kansas, and I wanted to move closer to my mother. And
yeah.
We ended up just staying in Bartlesville, a town of about 30,000 people. We've got a Frank Lloyd Wright building, the only skyscraper that he ever designed that actually came to fruition.
Oh, cool.
It's home of Phillips Petroleum, and there's museums and all kinds of cultural events. Nice little city.
Yeah, I'm looking up online just a map of the city. It's kind of cool. Adams Boulevard, is that the big street down the middle there?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. It's amazing the things you can look up how quickly with the internet anymore.
If you look out Highway 60, just a little bit west of town, heading toward Pawhuska, our house is about 3 miles west of town on Highway 60.
All right.
And Pawhuska is the home of the Pioneer Woman.
Oh, well, that's cool. So you're past the airport.
Yes.
Yeah.
Slightly, about a mile.
Okay, cool. All right, Bill, thank you for checking in.
Hey, thank you for being there. I love your station.
Oh, wonderful. Have a great night.
Bye.
Cool. See, didn't know if we had someone from Oklahoma, and then someone from Oklahoma calls in. That's KMOX, I tell you. It's really the power of it. Coming up, I wanted to play part of an interview from earlier today that is hit the ground. Normally, when you're in the cutting room, they say hit the cutting room ground or something like that, or the floor, means that it got out of the final edition and you would never see it or hear it. Well, there's something I had to cut from an interview I wanted to play for you next on Overnight America KMOX. Oh, I love those jingles. They're so good. So earlier today, I was recording a profile that will air this weekend on KMOX from artist Stephen Walden. He does some really awesome work. StephenWalden.com is his website. I'm sure you've seen his work. He's been all over St. Louis. He's a relatively new artist in the past decade, has really emerged, and he does a lot of sports depictions. And man, does he do some really cool things. So I wanted to profile him, and while we were talking about his career, how he got into it, things like that, I normally give him a chance to say at the end, okay, is there anything you want to talk about that we didn't get a chance to? And we started talking, and he started talking about authenticity of what it was like to be an artist. And what it was like to be an artist and how difficult it is sometimes trying to portray your feelings. And I want to play a portion of that interview, at least the part that hit the cutting room floor, in just a moment, because this didn't make it. I didn't have time, and it didn't really play into his what he does for a living and who he is, but it was so good, I thought, man, I want to play this for you guys. Real quick, let me get to Big Al, who's calling in. Big Al, what's going on?
In 1979 at Lindenwood College, I interviewed O.J. Simpson and Bobby Hall.
Now, you told me about the O.J. Simpson one before. I think you mentioned Bobby Hall. Did you like that Wolfman Jack interview?
Absolutely. He's the man.
Yeah. So what's going on?
Well, remember I called last night and told you about my mailman?
Yeah.
Well, I have a condo fee that I owe, my mom's condo, God bless her, that she gave to me when she passed. And it has to be stamped by the 5th for the dues, otherwise you get a fine. So I put it in the mailbox, and he didn't pick it up. Uh-huh. And I'm like, he was listening to record show?
Oh, no.
This is a deal. So I take it up to the post office that I found. I go, hey, look, this has to be time stamped. And he goes, sir, in observance of Mr. Bush, we're not picking up today.
Uh-oh.
I almost had him fired.
Yeah, you felt like you were going to give it a try.
I was ready.
Were they open?
I was ready to demand my rights. Yeah, yeah, but they don't pick up mail today because of President Bush, God bless him.
Oh, yeah.
He did a lot for St. Louis. He approved us selling the 15 to Saudi. It was in the paper, and he was sitting in my Eagle, God bless him. Mm-hmm. And he was a great president. And I just want to say, Merry Christmas, God bless, and I love you, Mr. Mailman.
Mm.
I repent.
All right, Big Al.
Rick, I thought for sure he heard it, and he didn't think so. I was ready to go.
He was waiting for you. He was keeping an eye out.
We didn't pick up today. Excuse me, I got to go. I'm going to the hockey game. And by the way, we lost that one, too.
Yeah, I know.
Way to go, Blues.
All right.
Rick, this team is softer than senior citizen porno.
Oh, don't give me that. Boss. All right, bye. Ugh, I don't even want to think about that. Blues, man. I don't know what to say. I really don't. This was supposed to be a good year for them. All right. Thanks, Big Al. Liven things up a little bit here. Okay. So I had a sit down with Stephen Walden, the artist here in St. Louis. I'm only going to have I can't play this whole thing, but I'm going to play most of this part of the interview. So at the very end, I normally ask the people I'm interviewing, is there anything that you want me to cover that we haven't talked about? And we started talking a little bit more, and I thought, this is such a good conversation. I want to play this on my show, even though we won't have a chance to add it as part of the profile.
You know, I think I tried to touch on a little bit of everything,
yeah.
You know, with, you know, my own path and, you know, that it's, you know, the therapy thing is a big deal for me and, you know, authenticity and, you know, radical honesty. I mean, I probably have touched on things that you probably didn't expect that I would, you know, bringing in a sports artist, but you know, that's part of the package, you know,
yeah.
It's a part of my story and I own it. And by living more authentically, I've been able to live a happier life. And, you know, it's a thing that I encourage other people to do. It ain't easy. And I understand why some people don't. But, you know, living authentically, and
there's fear associated with that.
Oh yeah,
yeah. The people are afraid they'll be rejected or made fun of or whatever it may be, and there's a real them that they hide, and they feel like there's no one else that feels that way, and it's a absolutely tough, it's a real tough thing in society at times.
And it's the thing at the core of that is that fear. Brene Brown talks about it in her TED Talk. You know, am I good enough? You know, if I show someone who I really am, are they still going to like me? Mm-hmm. And so that makes them really worried. You know? And I don't know. I, not to get all too Mr. Rogers on it, but, you know, yeah, I think that at the end of the day, you know, most, if not all people that, you know, they do deserve love and kindness and compassion.
I have been watching a lot of Mr. Rogers as of late. My 4-year-old.
Documentary?
Well, I watched the documentary, but my 4-year-old has really gotten into him.
Daniel Tiger rules, man.
Daniel Tiger is a very fine program, but he loves when Mr. Rogers will go to a factory and they'll show you how to make something.
Yeah.
He is so into that. And we like it, too, because it tackles some pretty tough subjects for a kid.
Yeah.
And they're not afraid to talk to kids about things that are difficult normally for a parent to sit down and find the right words to say to a kid. So I really admired him. So I've been going back and looking at old interviews, and no one can get a good read on him. Interviewers are very hesitant to talk to Mr. Rogers in a way because he is just so colorful, like he is on the television show and the interview too, and they don't realize that's him. That's the authentic guy.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of interviews of him, and I'm really just mystified by the way he's able to carry himself.
Do you think that the hesitancy of approaching him was that he would see them for who they are? And, you know, in that question of, am I good enough? And I don't know if that's the case, but it's a lot of the times when people, you know, get a little nervous if they find out that I'm a therapist and they're like, oh, you're going to judge me for everything I say. I'm not judging you. I'm just analyzing you. There's a difference.
Yeah, I think people that approach Mr. Rogers were... I don't think they knew what to expect, because it's a children's entertainer that act the same way in real life that he did on the television show. For anyone that's in TV, they realize that there's normally different personas between the people that are, you know, on camera and then what they act like when they're off camera. Just like any local newscast, you know, as soon as they stand up, you realize they're wearing shorts, and the whole time the audience has no idea behind the desk. So I think that a lot of times interviewers were hesitant to treat Mr. Rogers as an adult. They treated him like he was that children's entertainer, and they had a hard time like wrapping their mind around that he was this dynamic type of person.
Yeah.
So every time they brought him on, there was an interview I watched on YouTube just today where he was on Arsenio Hall. And good for Arsenio. He was asking him really tough questions. He was talking about, you know, how the times have changed. And he said, you know, when I used to watch it when I was a kid, we were talking about how kids were afraid to get sucked down the sink or whatever when they're taking a bath. But today, kids are like, we're afraid of getting shot, you know? And it's a whole different world the way. And he was asking these questions to Mr. Rogers, and I thought, yeah, Arsenio got it. And then I watched Joan Rivers, who had no idea how to interview a guy like that, because she couldn't get a read on him. And I think he probably would have been a great poker player. No one could have ever beat him. No one could get a good read on him.
Did you see Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Since my kids started watching it, we rented it from the library and watched it 2 weeks ago. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. Did you cry?
Yes.
Yeah.
I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
Yeah. I saw it at Frontenac in its original run. And oh my gosh, just in surprise about how emotional it was. But it's like, I think, you know, especially for me, it is really hard. Well, especially with my upbringing in the South and, you know, and how masculinity is defined. Mr. Rogers redefined a lot of what it meant to be a man that could talk about feelings, you know? And it's like, I didn't have a lot of those models. I don't think boys have a lot of, maybe they have more now, but we didn't have a lot of those models that, you know, it's okay to talk about these things and to figure these things out, because what happens is otherwise these expressions of feelings that men can't really articulate, they come out as anger. Mm-hmm. And that's why where you get toxic masculinity.
Yeah. I think that when I was watching that documentary, the strange thing was, I was tearing up in places you shouldn't be tearing up at. It was just the way he would speak to people.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it would just hit me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily sad moments or anything. It was just like, wow, that is so powerful, the way he's bringing up these things. And it was weird because I was sitting on the couch. My wife was watching it. And I'd look over and she'd be tearing up at certain parts too.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just me. And then, of course, there were some of those more emotional moments where they have, Well, we got to cut out. I don't have time to play the whole thing. But sometimes I have those really awesome conversations that don't get a chance to be in the interview. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to play that one tonight because I really enjoyed talking Mr. Rogers to an artist who someone could appreciate him in a different type of light. All right, coming up in the next hour. Oh, in that profile, it's going to air this weekend. Stephen Walden. Listen for it here on KMOX. Tell me something good. You got something good to share? Let's hear it. Coming up, Overnight America, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.